Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody. Happy day after Thanksgiving. I hope everybody's day was great, warm and family-oriented and joyful, the way it's supposed to be. For those of you who didn't have those kind of days, things will get better, and you have to work at it, but they will get better. So today is Friday. We're going to do a little recap. We had kind of a fun show on Monday, if you'll recall. We talked about child stars. I'm going to bring Shelly in. She just came up on my dashboard so she can talk with us about the recap. Good morning, Shelly.
Good morning, Rainey. Good morning, everyone.
Did you have a fun day yesterday?
Yeah, my mom and I played some card games. She's always been an avid game player, and there's a couple of card games we really enjoy. So we played some card games and had our little pre-Thanksgiving meal, which was fun. So we had a nice day, and I just got some other stuff done. But I mostly relaxed and watched some shows. I don't watch a lot of TV during the week, so I got to watch some of the TV shows that were on yesterday that I enjoyed. So it was just a nice relaxing day. I kind of vegged a little bit.
Well, I had a great day, but there was absolutely positively nothing relaxing about it.
Oh, I know that. I know that. I've been there at Thanksgiving before. You have a wonderful, wonderful gathering there, but it you're right. It is relaxing is not the word I would use to describe it. But it's exciting. I mean, I've been at your house other Thanksgivings. It's warm. It's fun. It's eventful. You know, I mean, you just have a lot going on, a lot of people there, a lot of great energy. So, I'm sure that's kind of the ambiance that was there yesterday as well.
Yeah. Well, and we got a little bit of celebratory news again yesterday. You know, as I mentioned on yesterday's show, I had gotten a little bit of good news about my sister on Tuesday night.
Yes.
Sorry, on Wednesday night. And then yesterday, I spoke with my niece, and they gave my sister some platelets. The platelets helped her a lot. So she actually, for the first time in 10 days, had something, a little bit of pudding and a couple sips of ginger ale for the first time in 10 days. And my niece said she just seemed to be more, you know, just a little bit of spark. And so we all celebrated that yesterday as well. So that was great news. So,
well, you know, somebody is not... somebody's in the hospital and not feeling well, anything that resembles some normalcy for them, even in a tiny amount, puts them at a better place.
Yeah. Well, I think they're moving her into, in Ithaca, it's not called hospice, it's called hospice care. And that's where they're taking her on Monday. So by the time we get there, at the end of the week, that's where we'll be able to stay. And she has her own private bedroom and stuff like that. So we can come and go, but know that if we have to leave for any length of time, she's taken care of and it's not in a hospital setting. So
right,
we're pleased
right.
about that. So,
all right. Well, that is good news. So, all right. Good, good, good.
So. Game plan, you know. Game plans are good. It's
yeah, and it gives you something to look forward to. It's you know, bonding for the family. You know, regardless of the reason for the trip, it's joyful. You know, because you're all going to be together, all the siblings, and it's energetically, it's a very, very good thing. So,
yeah, we had we picked on my sister last night. I'm sure there'll be some pictures posted today of the three of us, but. She looked at our younger brother, Danny, who is big like me, and said, you know what, she thinks I'm sitting in the middle. And Danny says, where the hell do you think you're going to sit? Of course you're sitting in the middle. So the rest of the night I had a the little kids call her the lady in the middle.
That's hilarious.
Yeah. We will. We'll hopefully we can even bring a couple smiles to Barbara's face. That's my goal. So
yeah.
That it's Friday and we're going to do some recaps. And I loved Monday's show because I loved talking about the child stars and the successful ones, you know, the ones that that really made a difference and are still good and happy and balanced. We talked about Ron Howard. We talked about Neil Patrick Harris. And we talked about Jodie Foster. And in my notes that I didn't talk about the other day because I wanted to keep it really positive about the child stars, I also, of course, looked up some information about people like Macaulay Culkin, Drew Barrymore, Lindsay Lohan, some of the kids that, you know, are really struggling. But again, we also talked about the fact that publicity, even when it's bad, is good for them. So you don't really know how much of it is planned or how much of it is, you know, publicity. But
right.
It was fun to hear how many shows Ron Howard has done. We were both surprised. Remember how many I read off so many of them, and I was like, God, I had no idea that he directed all these movies. Because some of them didn't seem like they were even his cup of tea, but he's directed a myriad of movies. And, of course, Neil Patrick Harris, you talk about talent. This young man is like a singer, a dancer, a funny guy, a serious guy. He is very, very talented, very, very well-rounded, and is very secure in his life, which is awesome.
Yeah. Well,
so
with both of them, I had known a lot of their accomplishments, but what was fun for me on the show was that I learned a few additional things about, about both of them that was fun for me, both about Ron Howard and about Neil Patrick Harris. So that was fun for me because they were both, you know, people that I looked up to in the entertainment world. But there were a few of the movies that were credited to Ron Howard that I was unaware of. And Neil Patrick Harris, I knew that he had done Broadway and I knew he had done other things, but I didn't know to the extent that you shared with us on the show Friday. So that was great fun getting a little bit more information about both of them. Jodie Foster was the only one that was not quite a surprise to me, but I even heard a couple things about her too.
Yeah, well, she's another one of those people who, you know, I kind of thought about it after we did the show, and I thought to myself, you know, these three people, they found something that they loved, not something that was about how much, how famous they would become or how rich they would become or any of those things or how shocking they could be. They found a profession that they truly loved. So all the other stuff didn't catch them. I believe that that's why they were successful, because the acting or the entertaining, they love. They really, really love. Whereas there are some people who do it who, I've listened to interviews with stars that say, you know, every time I'm going to go out on stage or every time we're going to do a shoot for a movie or something, I get all antsy. I get, you know, and I think to myself, then how can they, you have to love it to be secure about it. It's like you and I both know when Brian started asking us to do lectures and stuff like that at Hippocrates, and I thought to myself, I've never lectured anybody. I mean, my kids, I've lectured plenty. But to stand up in front of all of our guests at Hippocrates was a little intimidating the first time he asked me to do, or the first time he left me and said, okay, I don't want Hans and Wilbur doing the graduation anymore. I want you to do the graduation. And I was like, oh, okay. And but the first time I did it, I realized I believed in what we were doing. I loved what we were doing. So it was never a problem. So,
right, right. And I had a similar reaction. I didn't realize that I really enjoyed public speaking until I got to Hippocrates and I started, you know, doing some, you know, some lectures and guest things. And I was very, very comfortable with it. I enjoyed it. And it always surprised me because so many people would come up to me and say, doesn't that make you nervous? And it actually didn't. You know, some people are just comfortable with that and some aren't, you know. And it goes to different personality traits. But, you know, it's a very, very it's a very rare desire. Most people don't want to do public speaking. Most people are very uncomfortable with it. So when you look at all the really talented performers, they're in their element when they're up there, when they're connecting with audiences, whether they're singers, dancers, actors, actresses, whatever. They have a draw to it. They almost have a calling to it. And you're right. There are many that get into that because they were pushed into it because somebody else thought it was a good idea, but not necessarily them. And those are the people that will never shine.
Well, I think that that's true, and I think the security comes from, you know, being secure in what you're talking about and what you're doing. So for an actor or an actress, a lot of it is make-believe. So you still have to love the art itself. You know what I mean? It's not, I mean, you can't believe in, I mean, one of our favorite people that Shelley and I have spent time with is the infamous Hannibal Lecter.
Oh, yes.
You know, there's no way he fell in love with that character, and yet he did it superbly. I just watched The Right again the other night, too, where Anthony Hopkins is the priest, and he becomes possessed. And he's just so awesome, but he loves acting itself, and that's what...
Right, well, that's what I mean. I don't mean the character. I mean the art form.
I think it's great watch them when they're sure of themselves. You know what else I love to watch is the Dean Martin roast, and I love to watch the Carol Burnett show, reruns of that, and see all the people who just seem to be having so much fun and enjoying the company of all the people that they're doing it with. It's just fun, you know?
Yeah, well, the Carol Burnett show was great for that. As a matter of fact, I have DVD collections of that. I just thought it was, I don't think there's ever been a show that compared to that since. It was very unique. It was very, there was more ad-libbing going on in her show than in most comedy shows. Half of it was created in front of the camera and the audiences. You know, the other actors or actresses were just as surprised as to how a skit unfolded as the audience was, because half of it was ad-libbed. And you could see it because you could tell how they were reacting to each other. And like you said, you could just see the fun they were having. And the first couple of times it happened just because of the performers, you know. But then it became the formula for the show because it worked so well, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But it's, that was, you know who else?
Well, and they talked about.
I think it would be fun to do another kid actor show because it is fun seeing where some of them are. And it's inspiring to look at the ones that really made it big. Because obviously, if one person makes it big, it means they all have the same potential. Another one is Will Smith, who started out as a child star. He started out as a rapper, actually. And, you know, so there's a couple others out there that have really gone far with their careers. Another one is the one who was from Breakfast Club, the one who played the little nerdy guy. Oh, he's got, oh, my gosh, I can see him in my head. He grew into a very, very good adult actor. He hasn't made any blockbuster films, but he's been in quite a number of TV shows, and he's very good looking now. He always plays a, you know, like a leading man type role. And then you look at this character that he played in Breakfast Club, and his he has really changed through the years. So there's a couple others that I can pick out that have had very successful careers, maybe not to the level of a Will Smith or a Jodie Foster, but they're still there. They're still making series. There's a few more that we can touch on. But isn't Drew Barrymore in a good place now? I mean, I've seen some of the movies she makes. I always like them. You know, she makes
Barrymore
a lot of movies.
I read a long story about her, and I thought about using her because she started out so young and, of course, came from a family that was known for alcoholism and all that kind of stuff. Her grandfather and all of those people who were famous actors way back in the day. And she was just, it was acceptable to see her at all these adult Hollywood parties because she'd been a part of the scene since she was born because of the grandfather. And so her life kind of snowballed out of control. But yes, she most recently, of course, has children and has her life together and does a great job. I mean, I think when by the time she was in Charlie's Angels, she was already had already pulled herself together, and she has a huge accreditation for movies. I mean, page after page after page, things I didn't even remember, and some of them never made it very big, but she still has a very, very large career. And the other one that I looked at that I thought about because I always liked him was Kurt Russell. And Kurt Russell, of course, was a Disney kid way, 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 way back when.
Oh, I never even thought about that. You're right. I mean, because I don't really know a lot of his child performances, you know, but oh, that's right. I forgot that he started out as a child. I wouldn't have thought of him at all. You're right. And he's great.
There was a lot of kind of one-hit wonders, too, as children that are still doing things, but a lot of them moved into director seats like Ron Howard. And remember the I didn't write down his name, so I'm not going to remember it, but the cute little guy that said, "Show me the money," in that one movie. He wore the little wire glasses, and his face was just so adorable with Tom Cruise. Was it Tom Cruise that was in that movie where he was a agent or something, a movie agent, and they were trying to promote somebody? Oh, it's not all coming to me. So, but his
I don't know that I ever saw that movie because it's not sounding familiar to me.
His face was adorable, and I found a little bit about him. But most of those that were just so cute and so young recently, not years ago, but recently, didn't stay in acting. The young guy that played I See Dead People, The Sixth Sense.
Oh, yeah.
Willis. And then he was in my husband's favorite movie, The Lion. What about The Lion?
Oh, yes, that's one of my favorite movies, too. I think that was a wonderful movie. I know what the movie you're talking about. That's one of my favorite movies. I've watched it a couple of times when it comes on. It's just a very sweet, adventurous story.
Spike will watch it twice a day if it's on. He
yeah.
loves it. And then we bought it.
That is
yeah,
a great movie.
Yeah. So, but he, you know, he's gone on to do a few things, but he's not a real, real big name. But a lot of them, when they're really young, unless they have tremendous talent and versatility, they get hooked into a persona, and it's hard for them to break that. So then that limits their roles. And I think that happens to some of the really younger ones. And then, of course, poor Macaulay Culkin, who became such a hit overnight with Home Alone. And now he's, I mean, I looked at a picture of him and it almost made me cry. But he's, you know, he's on drugs, on all kinds of drugs, apparently. And
wow.
He gets, and then he's good for a little while. But it must be hard, Shelley. Imagine being so famous when you're 7 years old that no matter where you went, people had to protect you. People were screaming, oh, my God, Shelley, it's Shelley, it's Shelley. And then all of a sudden nobody cares. What does that do to their psyche? What does that
right.
do to their So the fact that they turn to drugs isn't really surprising, or other activities. I mean, I've read stories about people being young child stars because they become a part of the sexual world, that being their drug of choice, and
right.
ruin their life that way. But I can understand how, you know, that feast or famine thing isn't good for any of us, and it really isn't good when you're only 7 or 8 years old, when you can't understand what the deal is. Does everybody love me, or doesn't everybody love me? I mean, can you imagine what goes through their heads?
And some people will see, unfortunately, just like in any other industry, you know, there's so much drugs and sex abuse in that industry, and a lot of people will look to get ahead by doing things they probably wouldn't in other circumstances. So they'll go ahead and sleep with the person they think has the ability to say yes and advance them, you know, or they'll get into drugs because everybody else around them is doing it. You know, I've heard about a lot of these, you know, Hollywood type parties where the just drugs are flowing, and it really takes somebody strong in who they are to just maintain themselves. Some of them do. A lot of them don't, and it's the environment. And if you're going to go into that, you have to go in there with a mindset that this is what happens, and you're just not going to let it touch you, and you're going to stick it out until you, because some of them have. Some of the real greats never fell into that for any amount of time, and some of them, luckily for them, got into that whole, you know, doing the drugs and getting too promiscuous. But they only did it for a very short time and pulled themselves out. So, you know, so I applaud them. They're good role models. But I would like to see that industry clean itself up, because there's way too much rampant access because of the money they make and because of the type of parties they throw, or I should say some of them, because some of them are responsible. But some of them throw these parties, and then you're there and you're meeting all these people and you think it's norm. So you do the drugs also, you know, and especially when you're talking about a child star that's influenced, they're a child. Whether they're a star or not, they're still a child, and they're going to be influenced by what they see all the adults doing around them. So especially when you're talking about a child star, I think it brings about a higher level of responsibility to teach them proper values, and unfortunately they don't. They throw them into that limelight before they're really emotionally prepared to deal with it.
Well, that's absolutely true. I mean, I've thought about that so many times, and I remember the first time I watched the movie The Exorcist, and I remember saying to my mother, I mean, that's how long ago this was, I said, what's going to happen to her? She says, what do you mean? And I said, how can a young girl like Linda Blair, so young, her first real acting job, how can she remain untouched by that part? My mother said, that's a good question, Marina. I don't know. And I thought about her for years. For years I worried about what that must have done to her, because she was so young and they had her play such a horrific part. And then now, you know, you've seen lots of kids do lots of crazy things, lots of actors do crazy things as far as, you know, turning into werewolves and turning into this and turning into that, or just being evil, evil, evil. But let's face it, The Exorcist was the first of its kind, and it took a young woman who didn't have a major career or a lot of experience and turned her into this evil, evil. I mean, some of the things she did in that movie, when I thought about it, I thought to myself, how is she ever going to get past that? How's she ever going to forget about what she pretended to be? I mean, for me, and I don't even think I had kids yet when I watched. Matter of fact, my mother and my sister Barbara read The Exorcist and wouldn't let me read it. Do you believe that? Because my mother told me that it would be, I wouldn't be able to deal with it the right way. And, of course, then I had to watch the movie the minute it came out. But
yeah,
I
read the book and watched the movie. And, yeah, the book was even was rougher than the movie. yeah, the book and the movie both haunted me for a while. And I used to think the same things about the – have you seen Linda Blair lately? I mean, have you seen her in other things as an adult?
Yeah, a couple times, not very many.
Yeah.
Has she been in a lot?
There was a show called Scariest Places on Earth, and she actually was the host of that show. I had seen her in a talk show where she talked about after doing The Exorcist that she it did affect her for a little while. This is a topic for another show, but she said that there are a lot of things happened on the set while making that movie. A lot of things that freaked a lot of the other, like the crew members and things like that. So she was impacted by that. She said doing that role did affect her for a little while, but she ended up being okay. And she actually doesn't mind doing scary roles, but for a while there it bothered her. But now, so it's almost like she railed against her fears, and now she's the host of that show called Scariest Places on Earth, which was ironic that she ended up going back into that job. It's almost like facing something that bothered her at one time and doing it, because she's a wonderful host. She's got a nice sense of humor. She has a nice presence, the way she talks and everything, so it's enjoyable watching it. But, yeah, it did impact her for a little while.
Well, I can see how it would. Excuse me. I woke up with a cough this morning. I don't know why.
It was a cold weather.
The 30-degree weather in New York, I guess. I will do that. I will research that, and we will do a show on, you know, the repercussions of some of the roles some of these young people play. I think that will be an interesting subject and an interesting thing to research. Okay, so we're going to move on. I think that Tuesday's show, we talked about two of the most unfortunate, unwarranted, and unbelievable dramas that have happened in our world recently, and one of them was Philip Chisholm, for no apparent reason that could be figured out other than the teacher talked about Tennessee, and he correlated her talking about Tennessee to the fact that they lived in Tennessee when his parents decided to divorce, and that's what pushed him over the edge, who took his teacher met her in the ladies' room in the school, was caught on film with a hoodie on, had a utility knife and another object that he raped this teacher with, killed her, and then actually was caught in the middle of the act by another young girl at the school, and just said that she saw a naked butt and she thought somebody was changing their clothes. So she just turned around and walked out of the bathroom. But he continued on until the teacher was dead, wrapped her up, took a garbage can from the utility room in the school, and took her out and took her body into the woods. And when he was caught, he was just both people were reported missing by the parents, Philip's parents and the teacher's parents. And you know, they caught him later that day, still had some blood on him, didn't deny anything, and, of course, he's been found guilty. But he's just a kid. What on earth? And they said there were no drugs in his system, you know, and so we talked about the disconnect in our heads. And on occasion, there is no rhyme or reason for a disconnect. Just like sometimes there's no reason for a disconnect in your electricity in your house. Sometimes there's not a reason for it in your head either. So that was an incredibly sad and, oh, my God, why did this happen kind of story.
Yep.
And the second one that got a lot of notoriety was the story about Kayla Mendoza, the young woman who kept posting on her Twitter account when she was wasted. Things like, you know, oh my God, I'm so baked, and the most infamous one was too drunk to drive was posted on her Twitter account before she went out and got in her car and killed another two ladies that were like 20 and 21. And I don't know any more about her. There was nothing else to share about her. She's going to have to go to trial and everything for the DUI and for the the accident itself, but no other real information. So Shelley and I talked about the fact that sometimes young people just think that's cool. That's just cool. And this awful part about it was, what if she was just saying that to be a, you know, to have everybody think that she's, oh my God, she's doing it again, and the notoriety of it. How sad would it be if we found out she wasn't drunk? She just posted that.
Yeah, more than likely if she had an accident like that, she was drunk, you know. But you're right. What if it was just for show? You know, and this is something for young people to think about, is that a lot of times people, and this goes for adults too, by the way, it's not just for young people, a lot of times people will talk about something that they know isn't right, but they talk about it in a funny way, almost like they're trying to make it okay because it's funny. They do something irresponsible, they do something reckless or risky that could harm somebody potentially, and then they talk about it like it's funny, and then everybody around them, almost because they don't want to come across as being too strict or too conservative or anything, they'll all laugh, which gives the person the feeling that it's something that's entertaining. But the bottom line is, it only takes one person to react and look up and say, hey, you know, that's not funny. Why would you joke about something like that? And everybody else will get on the bandwagon. I've seen it happen because I've done it a couple of times. Sometimes when people share stories like that with me, I don't think it's funny to get drunk, to get so blotto you can't see what you're doing, and then get behind a wheel of a car. And I was sitting with a group of people at work one day, and somebody was talking about that, and I said, don't you realize that you could kill somebody? I said, why is that funny? I said, I don't get it, guys. And you could have heard a pin drop in the conference room. They changed the subject, and that particular individual never talked about it again because all of a sudden I made them all uncomfortable. I didn't do it to make anybody uncomfortable, but I didn't think it was funny. And I don't understand why people go there other than the fact that I think they're trying to convince themselves it's okay. And if they can get other people laughing with them, all of a sudden their bad behavior is okay. It's almost like they're looking for peer approval to do something that they, in their heart, they know isn't right.
Well, that's absolutely the reason. Absolutely the reason. Because, you know, if you can get more than yourself to believe what you're doing is okay, it becomes okay, if that's the mindset
right.
You have. That's absolutely
yep.
The reason. That's just like, you know, participating in smoking weed. Weed is a very, weed is like having a drink. And young people, I mean, even the really smart ones I know are convinced that it's not going to hurt them. And ironically, I wrote a letter for something that I'm getting involved in, the Sober House that I mentioned to everybody, and I'm very excited about it, and I'm going to be inviting some people to come do a tour of the house and see what we're going to do. And but it made me realize that, first of all, the biggest killer in the world today is still cancer. I mean, it's up near 1 million a year. But I found some interesting statistics. And the only drug, if it's used all by itself, that isn't responsible for any deaths that have been recorded is marijuana. But drug use, we will probably probably do another show in regard to this because I've also been researching Molly, which is one of the newer drugs that comes in capsule form. And according to my grandchildren, younger ones and older ones, everybody is aware of it. But there was, in the year 2012, 83,000 deaths due to drugs and alcohol. And directly related, the deaths were directly related to the drug or alcohol abuse. And cancer, I'm sorry, I said near a million. That's not true. Half a million, 580,000 cancer deaths a year. So I think that the fact that if you can convince, especially your good friends, that what you're doing is cool and they all do it with you, you do feel supported and you feel like it's okay now. It's like a mindset, you know. Well, just like you, Shell. If you and I are out someplace and we've eaten a really good dinner together and we've stayed on cue and then we both say, let's have a piece of cheesecake. Well, I'll have one if you'll have one. We've done this before, have we not?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So, you have a piece of cheesecake, I'll have a piece of cheesecake. I mean, you know, it's not...
You want it, but you're waiting to see if anybody else is going to join you in it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, one of the
statistics
on marijuana, which is interesting, though, Rini, and I still have this fact sheet. I still have some stuff to give you from that debate I went to.
Right.
I'll make sure I get that to you this weekend. But one of the statistics on there, they're not showing any actual auto accidents that are caused by marijuana, but they say that some are because it slows a person's reaction time down. So there have been accidents, but I don't know if any fatalities have been. But they're saying that employees who use drugs are 5 times more likely than non-users to injure themselves or another person and cause 40% of all industrial accidents or fatalities. So even though they're not saying auto accidents, they're saying that the slowed reflexes cause marijuana is directly is the cause of 40% of all industrial accidents and deaths. Because when people are working with this type of machinery and things like that, where something happens, you have to be very quick and respond. And when you're doing pot, what does it do? It mellows you out. Your response time to things, your awareness of what's going on around you is dulled. And that's why they say that they shouldn't do it on job. And a lot of people who smoke marijuana heavily do it on the job, too, because they think it keeps them in a good place. But it also keeps them very slow to respond if something happens. And that's a pretty high percentage, 40%. So, and they're saying that there is that it's responsible for 75% of absenteeism, tardiness, other types of job-related injuries, compensation claims, and job turnover. So they're saying that 75% of the problems with staff that have to be let go because they're continually absent or tardiness is a result of marijuana use because, again, it makes the person very mellow, tardy. They're almost apathetic. I'll get to work when I get to work, that type of thing. So I think those are very high percentages.
Mm-hmm. Well, but very, you know, I'm not an advocate of pot, but I must tell you that I do a lot of research on it because it's always been something that I fought with my kids about, and of course now I fight with my grandchildren about it. But it's about everything that I've read, and I do still want to see that report that you got. I was sorry that I couldn't go to that, but I do think that if you search hard enough, there's a connection to everything we do in our life. So I don't know that those figures mean as much to me as the cold, hard facts, but I do want to see them, and I do want to understand them. And I agree. It's not like I'm looking for a way out to make that okay, but I still, you have to be honest when you tell somebody something. And if it's kind of, sort of, in a roundabout way, you know, like, coming to your house, if I go to Pompano first to come to your house, that's really, you know, going out of my way to say I'm coming to your house. So it's the same with some of these explanations that I read online. And when I'm researching, I see a lot of these things. If somebody wants to make it so, they can get there if they take the long way around somehow or another. But the simple statistics, if you just look up stats for drug and alcohol abuse and see the itemized accounting of it, in everyone I looked at, and I looked at four different sites, zero was beside marijuana. Now, I knew in my heart that marijuana might have been the leading causes of what led to the other drugs and alcohol. I knew that, but I can't go back that far to blame alcohol or marijuana. So it is an interesting, highly debatable subject for sure.
So remember, this isn't about car accidents. This is only on-the-job accidents they're talking about. They're not talking about car accidents. They never mentioned anything about auto accidents at all in this study. This was mainly about the workforce, because they're saying that marijuana is the root cause for such turnover. And the reason I believe this is because the last job I just worked at, when I first started there, they had about 250 employees. And just in the first couple of months I was there, I know that a couple of people lost their jobs due to smoking pot because they couldn't get themselves to work. They would constantly show up tardy, and what was told to me is that when they were drunk, they were clean to get hired, and then, because I guess they waited long enough to get tested clean, but then they started smoking once they got on the job, and because their tardiness was so bad, they had them drug tested again, and they had to say goodbye to them, because they started, once they got the job, they went back to smoking again. They don't realize that the job has the ability to do random testing or to do testing based on somebody's performance. And so I know for a fact that a few people got let go for that particular reason, and it was pot. It wasn't any other drugs.
Well, and I don't disagree with that. I'm sure that that's true. But I'm talking about death. I'm talking about the statistics that I read said there were zero deaths attributed to the use of marijuana. But it's not about car accidents either. Neither were the drugs and alcohol.
We'll show on that. Let's research it more so that we can get some clarity for everybody on that. I think it's a good subject to kind of delve into.
Well, and it's also, you know, like I said before, highly debatable because it's one of those kind of things, but that's why you've got to have facts. Statistics are really important when you're talking about things like this because you can assume a lot of things, and a car accident is a car accident. But I alcoholism also causes cancer. So does drug use. I have lost two family members because they drank hard alcohol and smoked cigarettes, and
right.
That's how they got. And it's you know, but. That's the kind of that's what I'm talking about. I'm not talking about being impaired and going out and having a car accident. I'm talking about actually causes your death. Those are the kind of statistics that I looked up. And
causes
I wonder,
damage on physical body, you mean?
Right, right. It actually wears, if you drink all the time, it wears away the tissue in your mouth, and more often than not, the people that drink their whole life, especially if they drink hard liquor and not just beer or wine, they break down the tissue in their mouth, and they get, you know, their head and neck area becomes increasingly impaired and a suitable place for cancer cells to set up housekeeping. The same with, obviously, smoking. And lung cancer, throat cancer often is attributed to that.
Right.
Three times in my life I've sat with oncologists and said, you know, does this person have this cancer because of the cigarettes? Well, no. In this case, I would say not just three people, but many doctors. No, this particular cancer is due to the breakdown of the tissue due to alcohol consumption. So, you know, it is what it is. But anything, we talked about this a million times, anything in excess is not good for you. I don't care whether you're talking about, I don't even care whether you're talking about carrots, for God's sakes. And everybody thinks carrots are awesome. Have you ever seen somebody who only eats carrots? They turn orange.
Yeah, it's called keratinitis. It's actually a disease.
Yeah.
It's caused by too much keratin, which is something that's in
eating
the
thing
orange, yep.
You'd get anything wrong with you. So it's called, you know, overdoing it. So
yeah.
Okay. So we're only on Tuesday, and we're down to 15 minutes of the show. So real quick, I also want to talk about the fact that we did talk about Sandy Hook, and I read the story about Sandy Hook. And I have nightmares about Sandy Hook. I have nightmares about that young man and took his mother's life, and then all those people, all those kids, all those teachers, and then took his own life. And we talked way months ago when this first happened. We talked about the Sandy Hook story, and nobody could understand why he would do such a thing, and yet. When we went down through the story and heard all the stuff that they had found out that had been going on with this young man, there were many, many flags. Many flags that if one person had been watching, they would have known something and this may have been stopped. And
right.
I have said before and I will say it again. We have many problems in this world. And of course, right now I'm confronted with the cancer and I've done a lot of research again about cancer, and even in my tenure at the Institute, cancer was a big problem that I was very much aware of for a long time. However, mental illness, mental disconnect, the inability to see the truth versus make-believe or, I don't even know what to call how somebody who's disconnected sees things, but they don't see things the way they truly are. So one of the things that would help a lot with all the things that we talk about is to be more aware of somebody who's mentally unsound. And it can start very young, and it can manifest in many, many ways. Just simple idiosyncrasies in a small child, you should maybe be paying close attention. And I don't have any answers. I am going to make it a part of what I do in the years to come to really research and see if there are things that I think can help. And I'm hoping with Shelley's book that she has a couple chapters on mental illness or
I am devoting a whole section to psychology and actually going into mental illness, drug abuse, and things like that. Near the end of the book, I kind of transition into that before I get into my conclusion, because this impacts society so deeply on so many different levels. I can't think of one family that hasn't been touched by either mental illness or drug abuse, or I should say substance abuse. I don't know of any family that's clear of that, and it affects not just the person who's suffering, but it affects everybody that their life touches, and it ripples out from there. So it's something huge.
Well, and it's also something, like I just said, can often be identified very early on.
Right, right. Well, you know what I find ironic, Lorini, and this is something I'm trying to do research on because I want to get my own statistical information, is that I would say the vast majority, and there are so many studies that have shown this, the vast majority of people that are on psychotropic drugs actually do not have a mental illness. There's something physiological where if that physiological thing was corrected, the behavioral symptom would go away. But the people that really are sociopathic or deep-seated schizophrenia, which makes them violent, things like that, it seems like these are the people that aren't on drugs. And then you have the masses over here that don't need to be on psychotropic drugs because they all have terrible side effects. And so it's like you're drugging the people that don't need it and you're not drugging the people that do, because it's only a very, very small portion of society that has a mental illness so severe that it turns them into somebody that they can't interact with other humans normally. But that's a very small portion of society, and it seems like a lot of them aren't getting the drugs they need. So there's something wrong there with that picture.
Mm-hmm. Well, plus that, I have very deep feelings about misdiagnosis in small children in regard to mental illness versus behavioral problems. If you've got a kid that is just like never ending into something and never ending getting into trouble or doing things that you question, it's another one of those deals where you have to be educated in it. I mean, you know, or find somebody who is, because a child that has a messy bedroom and leaves food under his bed and doesn't flush the toilet and leaves his clothes in a heap on the bathroom floor, for all intensive purposes, is normal. So it doesn't mean that he needs to be put on a pill because you've told him a million times to pick up his clothes off the bathroom floor and he doesn't do it. It just means he's a kid, and it doesn't bother him if the clothes are on the floor, is the truth. And it doesn't bother him if he's got an anthill under his bed because he left his last bowl of macaroni and cheese under the bed so he didn't have to get up after he ate it.
Mm-hmm.
That's right.
And there are ways of dealing with that are behavioral on your part, being consistent,
okay,
having normal consequences that are normal consequences. You know, if they do this, hey, you're not cleaning your room, well, guess what? You walk in, you take the TV out of their room. Keep your room clean this week, I'll give you a TV back at the end of the week. I mean, there's things that parents can do that are very passive, but that make an impression. What kid doesn't want the TV in their room? I mean, for God's sake, that's like a death sentence to them, you know? Because you take away something that's important to them, and they say when you do the right thing by yourself, then you get all your privileges. Because, you know, one of the problems is that kids expect things. They have to understand that what they have in life is a privilege, not a right. No kid has a right to have a TV. No kid has a right to have this or have that. And that's another thing that we've discussed before, is that kids have too much of a sense of entitlement today, and then that makes them unreasonable when they get out in the real world. And then all of a sudden people aren't just handing stuff to them anymore. So this type of interaction is healthy because it says, look, this isn't a right of yours. This is a privilege, and you get to keep the privilege when you do the right things. And one of the right things is cleaning your room. So these are some of the techniques that you learn in behavioral training, you know. But the parent has to be consistent, and the parent has to go through behavioral training too, because a lot of them just don't know how to handle situations like that. And then, like you said, they go to the doctor. The doctor says give them a pill. They give the kid a pill, and now they've started them on a slippery slope for the rest of their lives, unfortunately.
Well, and the other thing, of course, is a lot of parents are afraid that their kid is going to hate them. I mean, that's a big affliction. It sounds silly if you don't have a child and you don't quite get the fact that, of course, your child is always going to love you. But if you have to reprimand them, give them hell every time you turn around because of their behavior, then you start feeling like they don't care about you. So then you give in many, many times. It's kind of a circle with kids. So
yep.
I understand, but the point I'm trying to make is that you recognize it for what it is. And I'm just going to share this with everybody for what it's worth. Screaming matches with a kid is one of the biggest acts of futility that is there. When my kids were little, and it still works today, matter of fact, I just discussed this with AJ, I quit talking to him. I just quit talking to him. And they'd pick up on it right away. And AJ said to me the other day, I said, he took food in the bedroom, and they're not allowed to take food in the bedroom. And he took food in the bedroom, and then he left it in there. And they got ants in their bedroom. And I asked the boys who took the food in, and they all said, AJ. I said, AJ, you know you're not supposed to take the food in the bedroom. I said, do you like it when Grandma's mad at you? And he says, no. He says, I don't. He says, you don't talk to me. I said, that's right, I don't. And he doesn't like that. And neither does any other child. So instead of having a screaming match or me having to, hurt his feelings and my own, I just don't talk. And it's a lot louder than my words.
Right, right.
A lot louder than my words.
Right.
So I feel for you if you got a rotten kid. I feel for you if you got a rotten kid. But it doesn't mean that he needs to be put on drugs. It means
right.
that he needs to be tutored, monitored, loved, and taught to be a nicer kid. That's all it means. So
that's right. That's right. I agree with that.
Everybody, we had fun with the Thanksgiving history on Wednesday, and things that we didn't really realize. It tickled me, though, when I said Thanksgiving festivities lasted 3 days, and I realized, they still last 3 days today. I'll be eating leftovers until something.
That's true. Yeah, mine goes until Saturday.
Yeah, there you go.
But in that particular case, it actually was ongoing for 3 days. So
I
with the leftovers and everything, it sort of is also.
Of course, most of those festivities were done outside. Well, although we ate, a lot of us ate outside yesterday. It was an absolutely gorgeous, gorgeous day. And
you
that
was so much fun for everyone.
Yeah, yesterday was beautiful for the people that called in and shared their thoughts for Thanksgiving about what they were grateful for. And that was beautiful. I want to thank everybody that did that. And again, it's all about caring about each other and being respectful of each other. And, appreciation of other people is an important feeling as well, appreciating somebody else's gifts and their personality and the way they suit you. I think a lot of times we don't think about that. So I think that's very important as well. So next week, the agenda is Shell and I will be here Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. Then I fly to New York Thursday afternoon to be with my sister. And so we won't be on the show Friday, and we won't be on Monday or Tuesday. I'll be back on the show on Wednesday of next week. So I hope everybody had a wonderful, wonderful holiday yesterday, and I hope that you're going into the Christmas season smoothly and that you don't blow all your money today on Black Friday, and that everybody really enjoys. So, Shell, you want to say goodbye to everybody?
Sure. Well, Renee, have a wonderful day. I'll talk to you in a little bit. And everyone have a beautiful day after Thanksgiving, and keep being appreciative and thankful for everything. It should go on throughout the entire year. So have a wonderful day, everyone.
Thank you, babe. Thanks, everybody. Everybody go out there and make it a great day today. And like I said, don't spend too much money on Black Friday. But have a wonderful weekend. Love you and bless you. Bye-bye.